Good morning and welcome to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We appreciate all of you for tuning into the show. Today is Sunday, May 14th, 2017. Joining me on the phone is Lewis Vaughn. Be sure to stay tuned for the American Atheist Viewpoint in the fourth segment of the hour. We welcome listener interaction during the live show with your phone calls to 952-946-6205 or emails to radio at mnatheists.org. Many of us are atheists come up from a religious background. For some of us, the journey from religion is fairly peaceful. For others, it's sometimes a rather bumpy road. Lewis Vaughn was born and grew up in Appalachia. He was a high school student Baptist preacher who found his way out via philosophy, science, and a Catholic college. Today, I'll be interviewing about his new book, Star Map, A Journey of Faith, Doubt, and Meaning. Lewis Vaughn is a writer specializing in philosophy, ethics, critical thinking, and religion. He's the author of over 20 books and textbooks and former executive editor of Free Inquiry and also a co-founder and former editor of Philo, a philosophy journal. You can find links and program archives on the Minnesota Atheist website. Lewis Vaughn, welcome to Atheist Talk.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great because your new book is coming out from a local publisher from around here called Free Thought House. So tell us why at this point you did a memoir.
Well, there were a couple reasons. One is that I wanted to understand my past. I realized that I had sort of suppressed most memories of those my religious days. And I tried really hard to forget them, but later on in life, as I read more philosophy and thought about it more, I realized that I really need to, if I'm going to understand my past and understand me, I'm going to have to go back and dig that stuff up. And I didn't want to do it. It was very painful, but I did, and I'm glad I did, because I learned a lot about myself and a lot about my situation back then. I wanted to try to show what being in that kind of religion, the fundamentalist Christian perspective, what it was like on the inside. I mean, all of my textbooks and other books, I had talked about the critiques of religion and the logical concepts and the evidence for and against that sort of thing. But I thought there might be a whole lot of people like me who might be interested in what it felt like on the inside, both the good and the bad.
Yeah, and that's also can be quite fascinating, especially I came out of a more liberal religious tradition. And so for that, as somebody said rather snarkily, it's like, well, you didn't have far to go to get to atheism, did you, on that part? So, yeah, it's interesting. And sort of tell us what sort of got you converted and when that originally happened.
Well, my transformation, what I describe in the book, is a transformation from true believer to unbeliever. But that began, like a lot of transformations do, in a single moment of skeptical questioning. And so my book is basically a whole series of such moments. I mean, in one conversation after another, both with myself and with others, skeptical question of religious belief yielded philosophical or theological doubt. It's sort of like an extended Socratic dialogue in which a belief is questioned, and through the questioning, the belief is shown to be unfounded. And that was the gist of it. And just the fact that was going on was disconcerting, because I knew that Christians were supposed to be happy, they're supposed to be well adjusted, and they're supposed to be enjoying all the things that God has given them. But that wasn't so, and it was perhaps because of my philosophical bent and my need to sort these things out, that I realized that, you know, there are a whole lot of things that I can't explain, and a whole lot of things are causing me to doubt. And then the ultimate doubt was when I realized that my own beliefs were in such conflict that they themselves gave rise to unbelief, not so much an external criticism from, say, philosophers or scientists, but it was the internal criticism that I was going through. And I imagine that that's what a lot of Christians also have. They may not be moved by an external critique, but they may be very moved by an internal critique. That is, those implicit critiques that arise from conflicts and contradictions within their own system of beliefs. And that's what started me on another path. And I realized that, you know, my usual way of finding out what was what in the world, my sort of intuition that God was talking with me, the Holy Spirit was guiding me and telling me the truth, that I had to give that up because those very beliefs in that sort of undermine everything that I thought was real.
Yeah, you. It's kind of like you ran into a failure of a faith-based method for trying to acquire truth. And how did that affect you when you realized that wasn't working?
Well, the central scene in the book is in which a time when I was convinced, as most fundamentalists are, that I could sometimes infallibly know God's will. I could know what God wanted me to do. I could feel his guidance and all that sort of thing. But when I put that belief to the test, it turned out to be false, and I was devastated. A single event proved that my faith-based method of acquiring truth was faulty. And that event was I had, after being a fundamentalist for several years, I had done what I always did, which was pray for someone, namely my grandmother, to live. She was on her deathbed, and I was assured through the Holy Spirit that indeed she was going to live. No sooner had I concluded that my mother came and told me, well, she's dead. Well, that was devastating because I thought if ever I was sure of something, if ever the Holy Spirit was speaking truthfully, it was at that moment. And yet that turned out to be false. And I realized that if I could be wrong once, I could be wrong 1,000 times. And not only that, but I realized that every religion that relies on faith or some spiritual intuition to come to the truth, every religion is susceptible to error because there are many, many other explanations for the feelings that I had. The problem is that religious experiences are generally indistinguishable from experiences with a known psychological or physical cause. I realized that, and I figured that, you know, the whole world was in the same boat with me. None of us could figure out exactly what the truth was based on our internal experience. I mean, we know, for example, that people are susceptible to all kinds of psychological pressures. We know that we naturally sometimes can hear voices. We can hallucinate. We can feel a range of emotions for no particular reason. We can engage in wishful thinking. We can randomly feel a sense of presence, even a sense of transcendence. And all those things we do ourselves. We invent those things ourselves. And so if those are alternative explanations for what I was feeling, then I realized that I really can't know if it really was God or if it was me talking to me.
Yeah, that is a tough thing that people will run into. I've also not really enjoyed a number of sections in the book, and one of the ones that was fun and I was chuckling at was when you were talking to two different pastors within your church about when the rapture was going to occur. And you were getting contradicting answers because they were both saying they were absolutely right when they were both at opposite ends of the spectrum, so to speak.
Well, that was another one of those conflicts within my own religion that sort of started to open my eyes as to what was really going on. I mean, here were two pastors, presumably experts in Bible interpretation, and they were coming up with diametrically opposed views on exactly the same subject. And I realized then that, you know, I can no longer accept at face value what my faith is telling me because there are disagreements. I have to think about it a little bit more. And sometimes there aren't just two interpretations, there are 200 interpretations. And that caused me to think about how I can know what is true about the Bible. That was one of the first big doubts. And I decided in the end, it was so painful to realize that this wasn't making any sense. It was so painful that I actually decided that I was going to ignore this little conflict. I decided that I would just choose an interpretation randomly. And in doing so, I was actually following the advice of one of those pastors who said, don't try to interpret the Bible through reason, use faith. Well, I did that, and I was able to ignore this terrible conflict that if I actually thought about the implications anymore, I probably would have given up at least large sections of my faith and what I believed in.
Yeah, it's such fun because they like to emphasize, prophecy and that sort of stuff on that part. So you're listening to Atheist Talk on KTNF AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. And today we're talking with Lewis Vaughn about his new book, Star Map, A Journey of Faith, Doubt, and Meaning. And so, Lewis, can they find you on the web?
No, I'm in the process of building a website, so no, unfortunately, they can't find me on the web.
But we will be able to find your book at Amazon. So we're coming up on our first commercial break. So when we get back, we will return to talking with Lewis Vaughn about his new book. So please stay with us. You're listening to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Scott Lohman. If you have a comment or a question, please call us at 952-946-6205 or send an email to radio@mnatheist.org. Today we're talking with Lewis Vaughn about his new book, Star Map, A Journey of Faith, Doubt, and Meaning. And welcome back, Lewis.
Thank you.
And another section I enjoyed is always the tricky part of sexuality and religion. And I found your journey to be both fascinating, challenging, and unfortunately humorous at times.
Yeah, that was exemplified another kind of conflict that many fundamentalists have, and that is the intuition that, pleasure, including sexual pleasure, is a good thing. And yet everything they knew about their religion, everything they thought, said that, no, sexual pleasure is wrong. And that's exactly the message I got from my church, from my spiritual leaders, that even holding hands was really a bad thing and shouldn't do it. So at the time, though, I happened to be in love, or at least as much in love as I could be at the age of 17. I was in love with this girl. And I wanted to touch her because I thought that was one of the finest things in life. And yet at the same time, I would feel guilty about touching her, even holding hands. And so I would sometimes just try not to, which was really weird. But and she noticed this and said, what's up? You're giving me mixed messages here. Well, I was simply wrestling with this conflict that probably most fundamentalists do wrestle with all the time, and to a larger extent, religions of all kinds, because there is a gap between this worldliness of the pleasures and views and objects of this world and those of the other world, which denies the first world. And I was experiencing that in a big way, and it was agonizing. And then later on, when I thought about it, especially when I was writing this memoir, I realized that, I was in an impossible situation, which is what a lot of people are. They're caught between these two worlds. And this otherworldliness is actually, I believe now, certainly not my main problem, but also it's a problem for every major religion. That is alienation from this world, from the natural, the earthly, the human, the temporal, and to diminish that kind of life, but then to have a preoccupation with the other world, the spiritual, heavenly, or non-material, and the natural, earthly realm was supposed to be shunned and diminished. And that's a problem because We diminish our lives at our peril. You cannot give yourself wholly over to the other wilderness without giving up something of the goodness of this world. And that's what I was doing, and that's what I think a lot of religions do. Now, there is a this is on a continuum. There are some religions where the emphasis is mostly on this world, like Judaism, but there are also religions that are way out on the otherworldliness continuum, and they believe that just about everything that happens has to be in response to something in the other world. Jainism is one religion that comes to mind. They are severely ascetic. It's a religion that came out of India, and they believe that the most important thing you could do is stamp out anything regarding the human and the here and now. And this is why, for example, the monks, they wear a mask over their mouth and nose so they don't accidentally breathe in a bug and kill it, because that's one of their main principles, is not to harm any living thing. And some of them go naked because they're shedding the temporal things of this world. Other examples are even more shocking, and that is, on this continuum, you also have, on the extreme end of otherworldliness, you have terrorists. And you have people who are basically suicidal or giving up on this world for their religious beliefs. That's the extreme example. But that's what happens when you completely forget about this realm and go to the other side. And that can happen, you know, you don't have to wait till you go to heaven. You can do that right now, where people do, in fact, do that. But also, what I found when I was in this situation is that I not only gave up, you know, many of the usual things, the sins of the flesh that the Bible talks about, but I gave up some of my humanity, my concern for people as people. I sort of neglected my power of reason. I stopped caring about nature and the beauty of art, and I certainly shunned science and morality that wasn't connected to the Bible. So I gave up a lot of things. And, you know, Albert Camus once said something along these lines about this very thing that really struck me. I can quote here. He says, "For if there is a sin against life, it consists perhaps not so much in despairing of life as in hoping for another life and in eluding the implacable grandeur of this life." And that's what I was doing. And, of course, I didn't realize that until years later. But, of course, to some extent, one degree or another, every major religion does that. And I think that is a fundamental mistake.
Yeah, it's almost overwhelming or suffocating in that process, where people miss out on the fun things of life, you know, a lot, but also, you know, lose their connection to the rest of us.
Yeah, and it can be a profound disconnect. I mean, one of the things that happened to me is that I was so involved in the spiritual aspects of life, that is, of my religion, that I neglected my family, in the sense that, you know, I wasn't always there when they needed me to be there. And when I was thinking of them not as family that needed my help or needed understanding or needed something from me. I thought of them as souls and sometimes as prospective converts. And when I thought of them as souls, I couldn't really add in anything that was physical and down to earth and something that they needed. So that was one of the prices that I paid for that attitude. And, of course, that attitude is prevalent throughout religions all over the world.
Yeah, so that does make that difficult. We're sort of coming up on our next break. So again, today we're talking with Lewis Vaughn about his brand new book, Star Map, A Journey of Faith, Doubt, and Meaning. And that book was just released this month from Free Thought House. And you can find at their website at freethoughthouse.com. And that book's available and is going to be available on through Amazon and a number of other places, and there's some national things going out on social media and other publicity, so keep an eye on that. So please stay with us through the break, and we'll return with our interview with Lewis Vaughn when we get back. You're listening to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Lewis Vaughn went on a journey from faith to atheism and along the way found out that life does have meaning without religion. Star Map is his memoir about that journey. It's published by the local Freethought House. Welcome back to Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. If you have a question or a comment, please call us at 952-946-6205 or email at radio@minnesotaatheist.org. I'm Scott Lohman. Atheist Talk is produced with funding from the Minnesota Atheists, the Humanists of Minnesota, and Cucumbers Restaurant. If you'd like to advertise on this program, please contact us at radio@minnesotaatheist.org. This radio program is put together by dedicated volunteers and the generous donations of our listeners. If you're able to help with a donation, please consider doing so at our Radio Fund page. Minnesota Atheists is a 501c3 tax-deductible organization. You can find out more information about the Humanists of Minnesota at humanistsofmn.org. Our music is composed by member Brent Michael Davids. Check the schedule for book clubs, discussion groups, pub crawls, movie nights, and other gatherings throughout the year, as well as sign up for meetups, listen to podcasts of previous programs, and subscribe to Atheist Weekly email, and become a member, all at minnesotaatheist.org. And now we'll go back to our final segment. Today we're talking with Lewis Vaughn about his book, Star Map, A Journey of Faith, Doubt, and Meaning. And so, Lewis, as you left high school, you went an interesting place for a Baptist. You went to a Catholic college. Tell us about your journey there.
Well, that was like an alien visiting another planet. It was completely different from what I expected, and it was also at a time when I was starting to doubt my faith and turn more to science and reason, because I figured, well, after all, it was reason that told me that my inner experience was not necessarily telling me the truth about the world. It was reason that helped me figure that out. And so when I got to college, I learned some very strange things. I learned that I thought it would, because it's a Catholic college, that every course would be talking about why Protestants are jerks, and that was not the case. And I learned that there was such a thing called philosophy, and there were many philosophy courses, and even those taught by philosopher priests at the college, they stuck to the text. They stuck to the topic. They didn't try to proselytize or say that science or reason was wrong. And I noticed that most of the students, that my views on things or the secular views on things were like indistinguishable from theirs. So it was a very strange mix of secular and religious, and the religious was very, very small. And it was at college that I realized that, you know, if I don't have God and if I don't have religion, then how can I have morality and how can I have a meaning in life? And I wrestled with that, and in the book I show that I had some help in figuring that out by, of all people, a priest who also happened to be a philosopher. And from those meetings with this priest, I was able to see that, yeah, life really can have meaning without God. And one of the strange things is that years later, when I got into philosophy more, I realized that the whole notion that I had when I was a fundamentalist, this notion of you can't have meaning in your life unless you're part of God's plan. God has given you a purpose, and you got to follow that purpose or you don't have any meaning. I realize what most philosophers realize, and that is that that argument is faulty, because just the very fact that someone gives you a plan is not enough to give you meaning. Because as a famous philosopher pointed out, what if God's plan for you is to be food for the people on another planet? I mean, is that going to give you meaning? So the notion is that meaning is not, it can't be just from God. Meaning has to be good for you. It has to be something that is really desirable. And also the plan has to be, if there is a plan, it has to be something that you want. And someone giving you a plan for your life is not going to give you any meaning, because then you take away your autonomy, you're taking away your free choice, and the plan, whatever it is not really yours. So I was able to figure that out later, but also while I was in college, I was wrestling with the whole thing and finally came to the conclusion that, yeah, I could find meaning in life, because even though God is not giving me meaning, human beings can give meaning to themselves. And so that's what I was trying to do. And one of the reasons I began to think that is that it was empirically true that there were plenty of people in the world who were not necessarily religious, who obviously had meaningful lives. Well, there's Einstein and Socrates and Nelson Mandela and Pablo Picasso and Susan B. Anthony and Martin Luther King Jr. And so it's obvious that they, in fact, have had meaning in their lives. And not only that, but surveys have shown that people who are very religious, they say they have meaning in their lives, and so do the non-religious. This is in recent surveys, they've shown this. So it's not the case that people who are religious have meaning and people who are not religious don't have any meaning. And I learned later that that there are intrinsically valuable elements in the world that can give you meaning, objective meaning, and those things include happiness and beauty and knowledge and moral goodness, what some philosophers call, sum up by saying these are the good, the true, and the beautiful. And these things include activities such as seeking justice with a disadvantage, or nurturing loving relationships, or saving lives, acquiring scientific knowledge, seeking wisdom, creating something beautiful, caring about the sick and needy. Those things are clearly meaningful and can add meaning to one's life. Now, it's possible that our strong intuitions about meaning, it's possible that these intuitions can be wrong, that we really don't have meaning in our lives. But these intuitions are pretty strong evidence that we do. So if we want to dispute that, the burden of proof is on us to show that how these things really aren't meaningful after all. And that's pretty hard to do. And so when I realized that, the world is full of meaning, whether I have God or not, and maybe especially because I don't have God. The world is full of meaning. It's full of pain, but also full of good things. And the world can be meaningful because the world contains things that are good and true and beautiful.
Yeah, and that covers a good section of the book, and I found that whole stuff fascinating as far as your discussion goes. That, but you also wanted to mention on how strong religious belief and indoctrination can be undone. So, what sort of processes is that, and how can we sort of help people, if we want to put it that way, get away from fundamentalism?
Well, as a philosopher, of course, I like to think that philosophical criticism of the arguments for the existence of God and criticism of religions would turn religious people around, and they would become convinced that, yeah, there's something wrong with religion. But in my experience, most fundamentalists, they do not respond to external criticism. That is, these criticism from philosophers or scientists or Bible scholars. But what they might respond to, and what I responded to, was internal criticism. That is, those implicit critiques that rose from the contradictions and inconsistencies within my own web of religious beliefs. Those things are what turned my head around. And that began my skeptical questioning. So my view is that a transformation from belief to unbelief can begin in many ways, but one column element is a moment of skeptical questioning, the very thing that religions warn against. For many believers, the best hope of breaking free is found in allowing that seed of skepticism to grow. And that is hard to do, and it was hard for me, but I let it grow, and it finally sort of took over. I realized that I had been misguiding myself all along. But it all began in one moment of skeptical doubt, and then that led to other doubts. But it can begin in different ways. These doubts can come in different ways, but it's doubts based on reason. It's doubts based on science, and these doubts come from you, not from some philosopher someplace telling you that the arguments for the existence of God are false. So it's difficult, but we know that people do go through this transformation in many different ways, as formerly religious people can attest. But one way is through some kind of doubt that begins small and that is nurtured. And when that is nurtured through reason and through science, those doubts can grow. And because we know intuitively that these are legitimate, these are legitimate things that we should pay attention to, that these are problems in our own religion and we need to think about them and see if they really make sense, if I really should be doubting this. And if they're honest, they'll have to say, well, yeah, there are good reasons to doubt this.
Yeah, that can be most helpful. We're getting on to about the last minute. So just quickly give us some good reasons on why philosophy is still an important thing for us humans to ponder.
Well, one reason is that it enables us that both reason and science enables us to take advantage of a whole lot of good things in life. And it's one thing to, you know, think hypothetically about some of these things, but it's better if you not only think hypothetically, but you realize that these things really are important. And philosophy can do that. Now, science can tell us a great deal, and any philosophy that ignores science there's a problem there. But philosophy can tell us a great deal. Philosophy, after all, is the discipline that is able to criticize the arguments for the existence of God and is able to point out that there are normative reality in the world. There are normative epistemological norms and there are moral norms, and these things are pretty much separate from science and things that that philosophy is best equipped to deal with. And I think that goes for a whole range of issues, not just religious issues, but issues about morality and the right thing to do and free will and the mind-body problem and all sorts of things that people, at one time or another, they do think about. And philosophy is also, strangely enough, is able to question itself. Like there are a few philosophers who say that all truth is relative and truth is whatever somebody says it is or whatever a culture says it is. But philosophers can turn that around and say, well, is that really true?
And I'm going to have
through philosophy, they come up with answers, and usually the answer is no, that's not true.
Okay, and I'm going to have to stop you there. So thank you very much for being on the program today, Lewis. Really appreciate
it.
And we've been talking to Lewis Vaughn about his book, Star Map, A Journey of Faith, Doubt, and Meaning. I'd like to thank you for joining us on Atheist Talk. I'm Scott Lohman. This show depends on the support of our members, sponsors, and donors. Join us again next Sunday, and stay tuned for Atheist Viewpoint. This has been Atheist Talk on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hello, and welcome to the American Atheist Viewpoint for Sunday, May 14th, 2017. I'm Nick Fish, National Program Director for American Atheists, and thank you as always for joining us. Last week on Friday, Amanda Kniff, our National Legal Director, appeared on Tucker Carlson's Fox News program to discuss a matter that we had been working on in Oil City, Pennsylvania, where a bench that had started to be called the Tyrant's Bench was placed in a city park by the local VFW. It was part of a monument that was supposed to recognize the contribution, obviously, of veterans. But the bench itself had a quote from William Penn, founder of Pennsylvania, that said that men who are not ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. And so the local press started calling it, as I said, the Tyrant's Bench, which was sort of an appropriate branding on our part. But we raised a concern to the city government about this bench. We said that its statement, while obviously the entire monument was intended to recognize veterans, the monument, or this portion of the monument, the bench in particular, disparaged folks who were atheists who had served in military, and it disparaged atheists generally, and it wasn't accomplishing its purpose of recognizing all veterans. And so we offered to replace the bench free of charge. We offered to we asked them to remove the existing bench, and in our offer to replace the bench with an identical one that just either had a neutral quote that could be approved by the VFW. We weren't trying to, you know, put an atheist slogan on there. We just wanted to say something about, you know, recognizing all veterans, and we would again allow the VFW to approve that. We asked that, or we said that we would want just a small plaque on the bench somewhere acknowledging that it was donated by American Atheists, as the rest of the monument had an inscription indicating that it had been donated by the VFW. The city refused. The city did not take us up on that offer. They said that, you know, they didn't want to go through that, and so they voted unanimously to remove the bench and give it back to the VFW, and the VFW in turn asked for the entire monument to be returned, which they did. So Tucker Carlson invited us on to discuss this matter. In it, he said, well, hey, wait a second, aren't you guys the tyrants here? And you know, Amanda did a really great job of explaining what the problem was, that it's not because it says the word God. That's not the issue we have. The issue is that the content of the statement, despite the fact that, yes, it was a statement by William Penn, it disparaged atheists, that a reasonable observer looking at that, I don't think a reasonable observer knows, you know, that William Penn said that. I don't think it's one of William Penn's more, you know, famous statements. But somebody looks at that and says, wow, that's a pretty strong endorsement or a pretty strong attack against people who don't believe in God. That's an issue. You know, that means that it's not doesn't constitutionally pass muster. And so it's not an attack on veterans. It's not anything like that. And the thing that really stood out to me as a just ridiculous statement was Tucker Carlson's insistence that simply putting American Atheists, saying, you know, that American Atheists had donated the bench, that was somehow an attack on Christians. And that's, I don't even know where to begin on that. That just saying our name was an attack on Christians. Saying that a bench, and I'll go out on a hypothetical here. If the bench had said recognizing the contribution of all veterans, okay, and it had said that and said it was donated by whatever Catholic church, American Atheists has no problem with that. That's just a neutral statement of who donated it. Tucker Carlson also asked Amanda, you know, would it be what about a swing set that had a cross on it? Would you guys sue over that? And Amanda said, well, I don't know what swing sets would have crosses on them, so that's a little bit stupid. Overall, I mean, the segment was very ridiculous. Tucker, you know, kind of played dumb with, the questions on this and didn't really get at the core of this, and implying that non-atheists would feel demeaned by a plaque acknowledging that American Atheists had donated a bench celebrating all veterans, it's complete nonsense. The thing that I want to highlight here, the reason that I think it's important to talk about this, is because we got a higher volume of emails and phone calls and all sorts of messages attacking Amanda, attacking us, but more often attacking Amanda personally. This was something that, you know, we're used to. We're used to getting attacked whenever we go on a program like Tucker Carlson's. But part of the point that Tucker Carlson was trying to make during the program was that an anonymous complaint caused this bench to be removed. And Amanda told him, you know, we keep the identity of people who make these complaints. We keep it anonymous until it goes to court. And we are, you know, we sometimes are required to no longer be anonymous. And sometimes they allow people to proceed anonymously. But we weren't in court here. Someone brought it to us. Somebody complained that he seemed to intimate that we were making that up in some way, or that there was not actually a person who brought it to us. I can sort of set your mind at ease on that one, Tucker. Someone definitely did come to us with this. And basically said, you know, well, this person's a coward. And there's no reason a person should be able to remain anonymous on this. Well, let me just, I'm going to give you guys just a brief smattering of some of the messages that we received and that Amanda specifically received after her appearance. She received misogynistic, terrible threats and graphic messages calling her all sorts of different names that I can't say on radio that are not something I can repeat, calling her a effing disgraceful POS whose stupidity is as obvious as she is smelly, calling her a fat pig, saying that they wished we would get cancer and die, calling us maggots, calling her, saying it's that they were praying Amanda didn't gain any weight because she would choke to death and die. These were the sorts of messages that we received. I have appeared on Fox News multiple times. I have never received messages like this. Dave Silverman has appeared on Fox News. He has never received these sorts of messages. It should be no surprise to people that, and it certainly is no surprise to many women, that appearing in this sort of position opens you up to all sorts of attacks and misogynistic attacks and, you know, really, really hateful speech from people. And, you know, that's kind of what we sign up for when we do this. We know what's coming. But, you know, there should be no surprise that we don't want to expose some person in a small town in Pennsylvania to the sort of hate and, you know, just terrible things that the viewers of certain programs on Fox News want to throw at them. That's what I'd like to leave you with today. Thanks, as always, for joining us. For more information about our work, please visit www.atheists.org. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.